Hello, hello, and welcome back or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and it is almost that time. It is almost football season. We are less than 40 days away from the college football kickoff. Are you kidding me? Let's get it on. I'm stoked. I'm fired up. And this podcast will get you going as well. It comes to you live from Football Heaven, a.k.a. Nike's world headquarters, their campus up in Beaverton, Oregon. I was up there for the Elite 11 and the opening. If you follow me at all, I've been around the Elite 11 for the last 9 years. For those of you that may not know it, the Elite 11 is basically, think American Idol for high school quarterbacks. The staff at Student Sports and Elite 11 goes all across the country starting Super Bowl weekend and goes from about 800 quarterbacks. We narrow to the top 24. We bring them to Los Angeles for the Elite 11 finals. From there, we choose the top 12, bring them up to the Nike campus. And out of those 12, you have the 11 Elite 11 quarterbacks and the Elite 11 MVP. And we were up there, and you're going to hear people talking and walking past us. We drop in right in the environment. I've heard from a few different listeners that kind of enjoy that. We do that randomly on this podcast. So those noises are literally the top 166 high school rising senior student athletes in the sport of football, because every position is up there, which is why we call it Football Heaven. Now, to give you a little context, Football Heaven, the coaching staff and the guest speakers are insane. We're talking this past week when I was there, it was Larry Fitzgerald, Jerry Rice, our college counselors, guys like Sam Darnold, Christian Kirk, just some of the top players in the entire country. But as I was up there and I was observing our coaching staff at the Elite 11, one guy who I've known for a long time, I just said to myself, I got to interview him. I got to share him with this group. And his name is Jake Heaps. Some of you may know that name if you are recruiting diehards, or if you're Seattle Seahawks fans or BYU fans, and some of you may have never heard of Jake Heaps. So let me give you a little background. In 2009, it was the year that I left coaching at USC, and I started at the Elite 11. It was also his Elite 11 class year, and he was named the Elite 11 MVP in 2009, was the number one recruit in the entire country, could have gone anywhere in the nation, including SC, where I had was on the staff that recruited him the previous year. He decides to go to BYU. And this is a guy who won multiple state championships in high school, was as acclaimed as any quarterback in recent history. Goes to BYU, starts as a true freshman, and absolutely rips it. Sophomore year, doesn't go as planned, ends up transferring. Goes to Kansas under Charlie Weiss, thinks he's going to rip it there. Clearly not the greatest of situations. Charlie Weiss is no longer the head coach at Kansas. From there, transfers again to the University of Miami under Al Golden. You know, is on pace to become the starter, and in comes a true freshman named Brad Kaya, who was recently drafted in the National Football League. So he hadn't really played a lot of football since his true freshman year. And think about that. Be the number one person in your profession, and then get the best job you could possibly get, and then all of a sudden, over the next 3-4 years, never play, go through the drama, and just, you know, the reality of bouncing from school to school that Jake went through. Imagine if you do that in your life. Confidence was shot. And he started to build it back up. He started to fall back in love with his craft. And as he told that story to the Elite 11 quarterbacks on Nike's campus, I sat back taking notes and said, we got to share this with a larger audience. Because he achieved his dream. He ended up becoming a free agent for the New York Jets, bounced around for a little while. Most recently, he's been with the Seattle Seahawks. And what I love about our conversation is that he talks about doing the lonely work. And this is a guy who, when he got a college scholarship offer when he was in high school, his parents said, okay, congratulations, now go do a chore. They instilled a work ethic within him. Now, as this young man continues to compete to get back in the National Football League, and I firmly believe he will end up in a training camp here in a couple weeks, he literally prepares in so many unique ways just to gain a subtle edge. And the lonely work, we define it at the Elite 11 as doing the boring things longer. Not than anybody else, just doing the boring things longer to really try to master your craft. Jake is one of my favorite people to talk to, a young man that I got to meet at a really early age in my post-coaching career. He offers great insight on his own path, his own journey, and really for some of you also, you that are kind of yearning for a little football news, he's going to break a little news on Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley, two of the top players in the country. He had to play quarterback up there. There's a day when all the college counselors work out, and he got to throw to all of them, and kind of dives into their skill set. We'll also break down Christian McCaffrey, who, when he really started to explore wide receiver position, Jake was there one of those early times when Christian was running routes. So you're going to get a little bit of everything. It's a fun conversation brought to you from Football Heaven, the Elite 11 Championships, the search for the MVP. We sit down with the former Elite 11 MVP, one of my good friends. Welcome to the pod. Enjoy, Jake Heaps. All right, welcome to football heaven here in Beaverton, Oregon. We're literally sitting in the heart of Nike's global worldwide campus here, the Elite 11, the opening. And we're going to get into all that stuff, but we basically are at football heaven right now. And I'm joined by Jake Heaps. Jake Heaps is one of the most prolific quarterbacks in the history of high school football, and that's when we met at the Elite 11. Jake, welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast.
Thanks for having me, Yoga. It's fun to be here.
I love it. So I always like asking people that I know, because I think it's kind of fun, if we each could give our rendition of the first time we met and what you think that was and what you took away from that.
First time I met you, I mean, it was fun because I knew you from when I was getting recruited and the time you were at SC and all that. And then, you know, now you had switched gears from coaching and now into the storytelling side of things. And so it was really fun to already have known you beforehand. But we really didn't get to know each other until that Elite 11 experience. And, you know, you always trying to, you know, dig a little deeper and ask a little more unique questions than the questions that I was used to answering at the time. You know, it was like always, you know, where do you see yourself going to college, or how do you feel about the performance that you just had, things like that. And you always were asking about how I felt and what made me tick and all those different types of things. And so my, you know, first impression of you was always just, man, this guy's awesome. This guy is just, it's so much deeper than surface level with Yogi Roth. So that was my first impression.
That's interesting because you're 17 when we met.
Yeah.
And I can remember again recruiting you when I was at SC and you were, you know, a big time high school prospect. And my Elite 11 experience, my first year, was when you were the guy. And I can remember you were the big name and you came in and I had known your film and I had kind of heard about you and you had won these state championships in high school. And I was always so impressed with your humility. And not like, I'm not the man, don't look at me, but like sheer, genuine, grounded. You know, one of my favorite phrases is be where your feet are. And I felt like you were that way at 17 years old. And I'm curious if you were.
I always have always been that type of guy where I've always genuinely been happy for other people's success. And I think that's always been something that my parents kind of instilled in me, was that, you know, you should encourage people, and when you're competing, that it's about yourself, it's not about other people and other people failing. So it never was my parents, whenever I got a college scholarship offer, the first thing that they would do was they would find some chore for me to do. It was like their way of trying to like bring me back to earth. Like, yeah, okay, that's cool, but you're still a kid and you're still under our roof and you still have regular chores like every other kid, you know, taking out the trash, cleaning the dishes, you know. So it was almost like, cool, I got an offer, now I gotta do chores, you know. But it was their way of trying to keep me grounded, you know. So I was always reminded that, hey, even though you are this big time recruit and people, you know, are asking you questions all the time and want to be close to you, things like that, that at the end of the day, life is bigger than that. And so that was always something that I was grateful for my parents would always do.
Interesting. For all of the first time potential listeners, this podcast is all about what does it mean to be human and exploring that idea. And here we are at the core of humanity, I think, which is competition a lot of times. And we're at Nike's campus. You hear people kind of walking by as this campus recently ended. I'm curious, if you look back on your life, because we just finished this camp with the top high school quarterbacks in the country, mm-hmm. of what your confidence was like back then.
My confidence was through the roof. My confidence in myself and my abilities, I mean, I thought I was Superman. I thought I could do anything, and I could put the ball anywhere and throw the ball anywhere I wanted. Didn't matter what the situation was, I was going to make it happen. And I think that confidence came through preparation. I trained really, really hard, and I felt like no one outworked me. I felt like in the entire country, no one outworked me, and that gave me a ton of confidence. And the other thing was that I was able to go do that. I was able to, you know, go through and beat people, you know, 60-0, and I was also able to be down 28 points in a state championship game and come back and win, you know, those types of situations. And so, you know, I'd been through those and it always come out on top. And so that had just been ingrained in me that you're going to make it happen. You're going to, no matter what the situation is, you're going to win.
You know, it's interesting because
a lot of times I think people look for confidence and they want to see the loudest guy in the room. And I have no memory even to this day of you being loud at all. but here's the transformation of that is we ask you to talk to the Elite 11 quarterbacks. And every night we call this the Elite 11 Minutes. So think of like TED Talks we brought this year and kind of created this new element, Elite 11, where our coaches or the mentors or guest speakers would come in and talk to them, from Alexis Jones. In the past, we've had people like Kevin Carroll, Pete Carroll. We've had some big names. And I thought it was really important to have you talk to them. And you told them about your story. And, you know, Dr. Gervais, who's also been a guest on this podcast and is a member of the Elite 11 staff, he talks about sometimes how you got to go through something hard to gain grounded confidence and evolve. You told them a story about going through something hard. Did you know it at the time, as a true freshman, you went to BYU, that you would eventually meet a hard time? Or did you think it was just you were going to roll as you started as a true freshman?
I thought I was going to roll. I genuinely had that confidence in myself that I thought from high school to college, there would be zero, you know, real transition. That, yes, I would have to learn and I'd make mistakes in practice, but I would come to the game and I would do my thing and continue to have the success that I had in high school, that there would be no downtime, there would be no learning curve, it would just be plug and play. And that was just the belief that I had in myself at that time. And so when it wasn't like that, it was difficult to deal with. Not because I wasn't mentally tough, but because I had never experienced it before. And I think one of the other things that, you know, you and I had actually, you know, come across the conversation is at that point, the game that I love never had hurt me. It never had hurt me deeply on a personal level. I've experienced losing, right, in sports and, you know, whatever. I played basketball, you know, baseball. It didn't happen a lot, but I lost. You know, I had to deal with that loss and adversity and things like that. But where it truly, personally, deeply hurt me. And that was difficult to handle. And so that part of that process, now I'm dealing with something completely different and new that was kind of life-changing in a way.
That's unique. So I don't want you to go down memory lane too much if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But take us through your freshman year and when, you know, even maybe as a sophomore, you started to feel like, oh man, I just got burned. Because I ask that because we're around so many young men that that are incredible that haven't been burned yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all of us and for anyone listening, when you play a sport, it could be high school football or it could be college or the NFL, the game tells you when it's done.
Yeah.
And you hit this brink of kind of this crux in your life where sophomore year you think you're going to flourish and the opposite happens.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing was, you know, I got to the point where in high school, one, I was super successful, but I was also around some of the best coaches in the West Coast. You know, I played for a Hall of Fame coach, and I also played for a future Hall of Fame coach in high school. And so, and they loved me, and they nurtured me, and they taught me, and all of that, right? And when I got to college, when adversity hit, it wasn't that way. And so it was different. It was one of those things where I didn't quite understand why it wasn't like that. But then I look back at it and you find out that it's a business.
Right.
It's a business. There are people's jobs at stake. And in college football and football in general nowadays, I mean, you have very little time to run your program or to, you know, run the show, whether it's a head coach, OC, you know, position coach. You have very little time to show that you can be successful with what you got. And so I didn't realize that. I thought that people would stick with you, they would trust you, they would, you know, try and mentor you just like they do in high school. And so that was an adjustment for me, that I realized that, hey, this isn't about you. This is a much bigger picture. So you know, going through that, at the same time, I was dealing with, you know, things in my personal life that weren't going very well. Nothing that I was getting in trouble with, but, you know, my parents had divorced, and we're in the process of that, and that was difficult. You know, so there's all these different things going on in my life at that time that were all new and different, and I didn't know how to handle it, you know.
Do you think, I mean, I can remember playing my freshman year, same deal, where I was like, wow, they just tried to recruit, and I was a walk-on, but it was like they're trying to replace everybody the minute you get there. It's literally like, okay, you signed, thanks. Who can come beat Jake Heaps out? Who can come beat, take Yogi Roth's spot or whoever the player may be?
Right.
And that shocked me. Like, that really shocked me. And then I went to SC and I was around Pete, and it was the same core message, but it was delivered completely different. Mm-hmm. It was like, look, this is the most competitive environment you'll ever go to. And we told everybody the same thing we told you. You're going to get every opportunity to play here.
Yeah.
So that means you better show up. And I'm curious, in your career, if the message came that way, you know, if it was love them harder versus, all right, now I'm going to try to really replace you versus I'm going to try to just get the best competitive group on the field at the time, if you think your path might have been different.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing about it is that when I was getting recruited by SC, that culture was just so shocking that Pete would come out and literally tell you to your face, hey, I want you really, really badly, but guess what? I also want the next guy in the next class really, really badly. And you're going to have to compete for your job. And guess what? The guy that's already there, he better play well, because if you come in and play well, I'm playing you.
Right.
And so to me, I was like, this is so weird. This is so backwards. I mean, how could you say that to people? And is he really like that? You know, different things like that. And then I got to play for him in Seattle, and I got it. I really understood it. And then, like you talked about, are they upfront and sincere college coaches? Are they upfront and sincere, or are they not? And the truth is, they're not. You know, they're sitting there promising the world to, you know, pretty much 90% of kids that they're recruiting. And when they get there, it's a complete change, a completely different story than what they're selling to these kids. And so, from the standpoint now, I look back at it, what's better, the way most college coaches do it or the way Coach Carroll did it? And it's the way Coach Carroll did it. It's upfront. It's honest. The kids know exactly what they're getting into. And I feel like when I was in Seattle, I knew exactly the situation that I was in. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly what was demanded of me, what the expectation was, and what the ultimate goal was, right? Competing, striving together to get better. And doing that by pushing each other and trying to beat each other out.
Do you think competitors, you know, athletes in general, and again, we just got off the field with 166 of the best high school football players in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they want the negative side of competition? Do you think they want to be like, kick his ass? Or do you think that if it was really ingrained of, no, him being his best, yeah, and maybe getting, you know, one-upping you is going to make you better?
Yeah.
What do you think they're accustomed to, and where do you think, if the majority of messaging came from one of those two camps, which one would allow for a higher performer?
I think majority of what we talk about when we talk about competition, we talk about society, we talk about, you know, dominating the other team, dominating the other person. And, you know, yes, there is an element of that you want to beat the other person, and it's not just, hey, I'm satisfied with beating you just a little bit. You want to have a clear separation, right? And that tone, that message, you know, dominate this guy, or versus, you know, hey, you're going to compete against someone really, really good, and you guys competing against each other is going to make you better. That's completely foreign and different that I think that should be used in this world right now.
It's really interesting. I mean, think about, like, some of the greatest competitors, right? You look at, let's just say football, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, right? Nobody's going to argue that.
Yeah.
Or let's say Jordan and somebody in that era, whether it was Magic or Bird or Barkley. It's like when they competed against you, then I'm just like flashing back to like NBC and NBA games.
Yeah.
And they want to kick each other's you-know-what.
Right.
But at the end of the game, there's such a respect. And it's like they're that elite, and then there's everybody else.
Yes. Yeah, and I think there's a mentality there. I mean, you go back to the story of Michael Jordan and Steve Kerr in practice, right? Michael Jordan wanted to dominate Steve Kerr, but he was also pissed when Steve Kerr didn't give his best.
Right.
So if Steve Kerr's, you know, not giving his best and Jordan's dominating him, that doesn't mean that Michael Jordan is at his best. It doesn't, because Steve Kerr isn't playing at his best. So he literally punches Steve Kerr in the face because he's not practicing hard. Like, think about that for a second. That's insanity.
Right.
But that concept of striving together, competing together, to make each other better. Like, that to me is amazing. I mean, when I first heard that story, I'm like, wow, Michael Jordan's insane. Like, he's crazy. But as I've gotten older, it makes so much sense.
Right.
Like, if I'm not getting pushed by my coach or by another teammate, I'm not getting better because I don't need to work as hard to be the best guy. So when we get in these types of situations, it's always interesting to see the kids that are truly excited to compete and or just here because it's Nike, it's the opening, it's the flash, it's you know, the cool thing to do, you know, and you find it out really, really clearly. I think it's clear from the skill guys and from the quarterback side of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, here we are in the middle of Nike's campus. You hear people kind of closing down, people locking doors, packing things up as camp has ended here in football heaven. I'd like you to do an exercise, and I want the listeners to do the same thing. When you leave high school, take a picture of your confidence, okay? And then, to give everybody the Reader's Digest version, Jake goes from BYU, starting quarterback, as a true freshman, transfers out, goes to Kansas with Charlie Weiss, transfers again, goes to Miami, think you're going to start. All of a sudden, Brad Kaya comes in. They go with a true freshman. And now I want you to take a picture of your confidence when your college career ends and compare the two, because then you didn't hang it up. And I'm curious what your confidence was like and why you didn't hang it up, because then you began a career in the National Football League after not playing in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at that and I look at that picture and I see what I see myself is I see myself with, you know, 3 trophies in high school, and I see myself with my teammates smiling and having an absolute blast. And then I see myself in college, and I see all 3 schools, and I see at different points with my head hanging low. And that's where I was. When I went through college, my confidence and my what made me, my swagger, if that's the term you would like to use, just slowly started fading away. You know, it's like that flame that burns bright and then eventually goes dull and burns out. And the thing that stayed true the whole time was that I had this desire and love for the game of football since I was little, and I knew that I could play the position, I could play quarterback, and that I had all the gifts and the tools. And there were a lot of things, you know, behind the scenes, politics, you know, things, hard breaks that didn't go my way, you know, coaches that I felt didn't handle certain things the right way, you know, whatever it was, there were all these things that I experienced in 3 different programs. And at the end of the day, I still felt like I could do this. And you know, and I told, you know, the story with the Elite 11 guys that I really, at the point when I was told that I wasn't going to be a starting quarterback in Miami, I thought right then and there my career was done. I thought I was done playing football. And I sat there and really on the verge of tears, I go to my wife and I tell her, who has moved with me from BYU to Kansas and to Miami and has gotten jobs and you know, all that, and supported me through that. And I tell her what's happened. And her immediate response was unbelievable. It wasn't, okay, well, what are we going to do now? And what are we going to go, you know, what kind of job you're going to go pursue? It was like, okay, so what are you going to do to get ready for the draft? Where are we going to go? How are you going to get ready for it? And I'm like, Brooke, I'm not going to play my senior year. No one's going to want me. And she said, well, you're never going to know what could have happened if you don't go for it.
Wow.
And I sat back and I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to go through life with regret. I'm not going to go look back in the mirror, you know, 20, 30 years from now and say, you know what? What if I just sucked it up and worked as hard as I could and you know, let the chips fall where they may? And so literally at that point, as soon as the season ended, I moved back. Me and my wife, we moved back to Washington. And I train every single day for 6 days. It was one of those things where I was so determined and so focused. It was kind of an obsession at that point. That, yes, I'm going to work so hard and I'm going to get my body so physically ready because I know I can do this. I know that if I get a chance, some team believes in me, I'm going to capitalize on it. And, you know, 9 months later, I get in the best shape of my life. I'm 220. I've got, you know, 10% body fat. I go and dominate my pro day. And, you know, luckily I was able to get a call by the Jets for a minicamp tryout. And it was pretty crazy. And even then, a minicamp tryout, for people that don't know, when you get called to do a minicamp tryout, there are 80 guys that end up doing a minicamp tryout, and maybe they sign one or two.
Wow.
And so it was cool. It was awesome. But my chances weren't very high. And again, I'm not going to live with any regret. So I'm going to continue to go down that road, and I'm going to go to New York, and I'm going to give them everything I got. I'm going to study the playbook as hard as I can, and I'm going to enjoy every single moment on the field and let the chips fall where they may. And when I did that, I played really well, and they ended up signing me.
Wow. I mean, I have so many questions for you. You're an absolute amazing young man now, father, husband, all those amazing elements in your life. You tell a story, and I have a rule that I'm going to break in this podcast. My one rule is that I don't ask questions that I know the answer to, but I'm going to break it because the story to me was absolutely one of the more powerful stories I've heard. You were teaching the quarterbacks at Elite 11 how to study, how to prepare. And I'm curious for you if you can share the story of what you do on the drive to work when you lived an hour away from the Seahawks facility. Yeah. I really think it'll relate to any profession. And to go back to when I asked you to take a picture of your confidence in high school, mm-hmm. take a picture of it when your college career ends, and for those listening, to even maybe crux in your professional career and personal life as well, and how does that dip and how do you regain it? Because now it seems as though you're as confident as you've ever been.
Yeah. I think that from my experiences with the Jets, it gave me a lot of confidence. And then when I signed with the Seahawks, who was the team that I grew up dreaming to play for as a kid, you know, so, you know, I'm back in Washington, I'm back around my support system, you know, my family, the people that really truly believed in me, you know, from a community standpoint, and now I'm playing for the Seahawks, and I at that point I couldn't have felt more blessed. And, you know, there had been this path that I had taken that was so unorthodox, and I'm still playing in the National Football League and getting a chance to play for the team that I always dreamed of playing for. And, you know, and so at that point, I was like, okay, like I said, I'm going to have no regrets. I'm going to give it everything I have. And so me and my wife, we lived an hour away from the Seahawks facility, and I would study the playbook all day and give it everything I had. And then what I would do is I would voice record myself calling the plays. And on the drive there, an hour, instead of listening to music, instead of listening to, you know, books on tape or whatever, I would start the day listening to the play calls. And I would pause it, and I would call the play in the car, and I'd go through every single play that was on the script, and through the installs and everything. And by the time I got to the facility, the confidence that I had was at my peak because I knew I was more prepared than anybody. I knew that I wanted to go and rival Russell Wilson in terms of how well he knew that playbook. And so, you know, that was my goal, was to show up earlier, to, you know, understand the playbook better, you know, and you know, I was going to do everything I could to do that.
I love that. I mean, we want to define, like, the lonely work. We always talk about doing the boring things longer than the other things. I'm curious, the last couple of questions before we get you out of here. What in your eyes, what does it mean to be human?
In my eyes, what it means to be human is to experience love, to experience, you know, hate, success, adversity, and to be able to go through all those things and to find who you are. I think that's what it means to be human. I think being able to be vulnerable, being able to look in the mirror and say, am I good enough? And if I'm not, what can I do to be better? Because I think we all try and find who we are. I think that's, you know, kind of what life is about. And so for me, I had this picture. I had this identity of who I was. And I didn't become that. Right. So who I thought I was in middle school and high school was this future first round NFL pick, right? And I didn't become that. And so I got a whole new perspective on life and on, you know, how to treat people, what to do, what not to do. And, you know, like I said, I had my wife through this whole process, what it was like to experience adversity with someone that truly loves and cares about you, and how you support each other and grow together and everything. And so that's how I see what defines being human, is continuing to grow, success or failure, and always striving to be better.
So within that context, what makes you feel the most alive?
Honestly, the thing that makes me feel the most alive is being a dad and a husband. I mean, it truthfully is. I mean, for a long time, it was sports. It was football. I mean, that's really what it was. That was my place, and it still is. It's my sanctuary. Of when I step on that field, I feel at peace. I feel like that's where I belong. But now, I have this place where I go home. I have my wife that I know loves me, and I love her, you know, more than anything in this world. And now I have my son, who just gives me a whole new perspective that I never had before. You know, the way he looks at life, the growing that he does, and the teaching that I have to do as a father, it just is indescribable. You know, I always hated when people or my parents would say, you know, one day you're going to understand when you have a kid, you know, and it was like, okay, whatever. And when my son was born, everything changed for me. And so now it's not just about trying to do things for me or even for my wife. It's about trying to be the best person that I can be so that I can be the best father. And I have to constantly work on myself, because if I don't, then I'm not giving my very best to my son. And so to me, going home, playing with him, and, you know, seeing him grow, I mean, now he's starting to take little baby steps now, and he's just been so fun to be around and grow with. And so that's what gives me the most joy and makes me feel the most alive.
Oh, dude, amazing. Jay Keeps, this competition, right, it's where competition means a football camp, has got a lot of unique layers to it. One is the college counselor element, where we bring back quarterbacks from college, but also at the opening, all positions. I think college football fans, as college football is right around the corner, you got to throw to some of the best current college football players. A takeaway from that workout when you were the quarterback for a lot of these top wide receivers, running backs, tight ends?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there were a couple kids that standing out to me. I mean, Christian Kirk, unbelievable talent. I mean, he's pretty special in terms of, you know, he's really young. I mean, he's really young in this process right now, but he is NFL ready in terms of his route running ability. You know, you can tell that he has this desire, this work ethic. He's willing to run every route in the route tree if I asked him to. You know, he would, you know, even if he's dog tired, he would take that next rep. You know, and then I was able to work with Ridley from Alabama, and the kid is so naturally talented. It's not even funny. I mean, he is going to light it up at the next level, and it's easy for him. It's just it's easy. He's smooth. He can run every route and do it with ease. And so it's pretty cool to work with some of these guys. And, you know, last year I was able to throw with Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, now people are like, how does he fit in the NFL, things like that. And he's a running back that didn't know how to run routes, and so I was able to work with him one time and, you know, teach him some slot routes and stuff like that. And the guy was a freak. He could run everything. And so seeing him, I told him afterwards that no matter what you are, running back, slot receiver, whatever they put you, you're going to be the dude in the NFL. And so it's cool to see him now, you know, go super high in the draft, and, you know, just knowing who he is, knowing his work ethic, and just in that short time that I had the opening, you could tell that he was going to be very successful. I'm excited to see him in the NFL. And I think, you know, those two guys, I think they have bright futures.
I love that, man. You're an Elite 11 MVP, an alumnus from 2009. This year's MVP, Justin Fields, uncommitted. I think we would agree, one of the more talented guys we've seen in our careers, evaluating high school quarterbacks at least. When you come back in this process, not, you're not a counselor. You know, you're a coach. You're leading. You're calling plays. You're working with these young student athletes. You are a pro. You're the closest thing to a pro that they can even touch right now. Curious what your take was on here at the opening with the Elite 11 embedded in it and all the things that were passed on to these quarterbacks from guys like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think I come into this with so much pride, you know, one, because I was just like these guys. These guys look at this experience and go, man, I dream to get here one day. I dream to be in football heaven where we're sitting right now. There's kids all across the country that are dreaming and striving to be here, which is so cool. It's so special to be a part of this. And to know that I was one of those kids and was able to win the MVP, I have tremendous pride in that. But what I also do is I carry that side of it where I know a guy like Justin Fields has all this talent and has all the ability in the world, and I know that the work doesn't stop here. And I think for a lot of these kids, this is an experience where they get to showcase their talents, they get to, you know, do some really cool things. And the main message that I have as a coach for these guys is that the work never stops. You are not a finished product yet. You have not arrived yet. You have to start all over when you get to college. And if you're successful through college, you have to start all over when you get to the NFL. And it's this constant process. And when you look at guys, you know, I was able to play with Russell Wilson and be around him and get to know him really well. And, you know, you get to hear stories about Tom Brady and Drew Brees and all these guys. They truly are never satisfied. They're always looking for the next thing that they can either fix in their game or that can take their game to the next level. And so if these kids that are as talented as they are, and we all see it, these guys, you know, there was 12 quarterbacks here, we all see the talent and ability that they have. And if they can keep that attitude of, I know I'm not there yet, that I still need to work and that I'm willing to work every single day, they're gonna light it up. I mean, we're gonna have 12 guys. We'll go 12 for 12 in this class in terms of draft picks. And, you know, and so that's the part where I know the percentages are against them, and there's gonna be guys that don't succeed out of this class every year. There's a certain percentage of guys that are not gonna succeed out of this class. And I want to make sure that from us as a staff that we're doing everything that we can to give those 12 kids the chance to be successful. That they, if they did not hear this message, that, you know, they weren't as prepared as they could have been. And I feel like where it is now, the opening, the Elite 11, with you, with Trent, with the coaching staff that's in place, I feel like if I would have had that experience, I felt like it could be different. And so as a coach, that really motivates me, not only as a coach, but as a mentor in this whole process with these guys.
So what's next for you?
Continuing to work out, continuing to stay ready for the next call. Hopefully that comes sooner than later. But in the meantime, I'm really committed to, you know, training quarterbacks and training quarterbacks and training young men. That's the biggest part of this. I think the coolest part about all of this is that there's the on-field stuff, teaching them how to be great quarterbacks, teaching them how to be leaders and command the huddle and learn the playbooks and learn plays and all that stuff. But the soul building of it. Yeah. And I think that's so crucial, and that's so lacking in this industry. And so I've been there. I've done that. This is not about me. This is not about me trying to become the next QB guru. This is about trying to help young kids live their dreams and learn how to do it the right way. To me, that's everything. And if I could have an influence on kids to become better men, and prepare them for, you know, their future jobs one day, then that's all I could ever ask for.
That's amazing. Here we are finishing up here at the opening. You're hearing parents go by, say goodbye to each other. The bonds between student-athletes and student-athletes, kids that are on their way to colleges, some at the same colleges, and some are going to have to deal with a lot of different things, like picking up their jackets as they're picking up their gear as we finish up this podcast. Jake, my last question for you, I'd like to ask everybody, is how do you feel about the word limits?
I hate the word limits because it's not the cliche of, you know, there are no limits. I think we put limitations on ourselves. I think we as individuals, we say, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm not good enough. you know, I don't speak in public because I fear it, or you know, I don't go out and exercise today because I know I'm not going to be able to go and run 5 miles. You know, I might barely be able to get through one. We put limitations on ourselves all the time. And I think that as we go through life, we have to be able to look at life and know that we're never going to do anything perfect. I tell my quarterbacks all the time, Rome wasn't built in a day. It took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And so anything that you do, yes, you're not going to be perfect the first time. You're not going to do things correct all the time. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to do that. But if you put limits on yourself, you're never going to grow. You're never going to grow. And so, and that's the most important thing in life, is growing and developing and continuing to strive to be your very best. And so if you put limits on yourself, you hinder yourself from ever growing.
I love it, man. It has been an absolute pleasure getting to know you as a young 17-year-old, but then watching your career continue to grow. And whoever gets you next is going to be really fortunate, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Yogi. Appreciate it, man.
I love it. As Jake Heaps, here we are in football heaven. And as we always end this podcast with the same phrase, that the only limits that you have in life are the ones we set ourselves. Peace.